Okay, our next speaker is Dr. Davich Sanerji from McGill University in Montreal, who is going to talk about colonial modernity, memory, and the Devanasi dance tradition of the Veramarani Moroccan temple.
All you need to do is go to video and put and enter full screen. But if
yeah, actually, I'm okay even putting it up this way.
Yeah?
If it's okay.
Yeah,
I don't need to go, because otherwise I'll have to keep going back and forth.
Okay.
Can I just get you to... All right, so you'll have to bear with me here. I think John Court earlier had mentioned that the images were a kind of form of bhoga. I think in that case, my presentation is a type of mahabhoga, in the sense that I have both the DVD and PowerPoint that I'm going to be toggling between. So you'll have to bear with us during the transition periods, and I do apologize for that a little bit. But in the meanwhile, while we get set up here... I would just like to begin by thanking the center, and especially Himanshu Prabhaji, for all of her wonderful work in bringing all of us together here. Hopefully. Oops. Sorry about this, just give me 1 second. All right, I'm actually just going to begin my presentation with a small excerpt, a video excerpt. In South Indian temples, this is typically the image that flashes before our minds. The Devadasi stands before the deity and performs a task that corresponds to the daily ritual cycle of the temple. Our Muthukannammal, the last Devadasi to be dedicated at the Viralimalai temple, remembers performing such tasks every evening as part of the Sairache and Palliyare Seva, that is the evening puja and the bedchamber service. But when I met Muthukannammal in 2004, she also performed courtly genres associated with colonial Pudukote and Tanjavur that she claimed to have danced on a regular basis inside the Chandanakottam, a mandapa inside the temple complex. I'm not suggesting here that the overlap of temple and courtly repertoire is anomalous in itself. I have argued elsewhere that Devadasi courtly repertoire from Tanjavur, Pithapuram, and Vizayanagaram has been performed as ritual repertoire in temples patronized by these courts. Rather, I am concerned here with a specific kind of displacement of repertoire that indexes a major epistemological rupture in Devadasi performance. Muthukanna continued to perform illegally at Viralimalai until the late 1950s, a decade after social reform movements had supposedly cleansed South Indian temples of such women. It is Muthukanna's dubious status in this liminal period that interests me. In this paper, I argue that Muthukanna's repertoire, and indeed her identity as a Devadasi itself, hinges on issues of memory and recovery. Muthukanna kept this repertoire alive, in spite of its seemingly displaced or perfunctory nature, for no one other than herself. And for her, the act of remembering resists attempts to erase or deny the past. I suggest that identity can be produced through acts of memory, and Muthukanna remembers in order to affirm her subjectivity in the present. Just as Joanne Waghorn notes that the 19th century Maharajas of Pudukote, who had lost all land with the exception of their palaces and private estates to the British, were Rajas without kingdoms who remained Rajas nonetheless, I suggest that Muthukanna, divested of both ritual and land tenure privileges and a context for her performances, retains her Devadasi identity even today. This paper is divided into three parts. In the first part, I provide a context for the disenfranchisement of the Devadasis of Virali Malay by linking them to historical processes at the Pudukkote Darbar. In the second part of the paper, I shift the focus specifically to Muthukanna and her performances. After introducing the repertoire that she inherited in the 1930s, I analyze two major courtly compositions, the Shabdam, or Salamu, and Nottuswaram, in order to investigate the nature of Muthukanna's sense of displaced belonging as a Devadasi. I examine how the compositions themselves are symbols for a past, a subjectivity that Muthukanna constructs for herself. I conclude with some remarks on memory and why Muthukanna's performance of her Devadasi identity through acts of remembrance is efficacious in the volatile conditions of the present. Long before the implementation of the well-known Anti-Devadasi Act of 1947, Muthukanna's community was already undergoing a process of recuperation. Muthukanna's family belonged to a larger network of Devadasis in the Pudukkote region who shared and exchanged repertoire, technique, and accompanists. This included the dance and music traditions of the Pudukkote Palace, the Tirugokarnam Brihadambal Temple, and the Virali Malay Temple. In 1878, under pressure from the British, the newly appointed Prime Minister, Diwan of Pudukkote, A. Sheshaya Shastri, ushered in a series of reforms to palace life. One of his top priorities was to rid the palace of its resident dancing girls, who were seen as visible signs of the king's excessive sensual indulgences. Following Shastri's reforms, temporary troops of Devadasis were brought to the palace from the Tirugokarnam temple to participate in palace celebrations. The Devadasis who left the Pudukkote palace took with them a vast repertoire of music, dance, and poetry, which found little currency outside its original context. Many of these women, according to Muthukanna and Natvanars or dance masters from the Tirugokarnam temple, joined the Tirugokarnam temple as non-dedicated performers. Now, this is something that's very important, and I've talked about this elsewhere, but non-dedicated performers were, in fact, very common among Devadasi communities. We tend to think that when we say Devadasi dancer, all of those women were, in fact, married to the temple deity and had land privileges, etc., etc., but that's, in fact, not the case. The majority of women in these professional dancing communities were not dedicated to temples, and very few of them, in fact, did have temple privileges. Instead, what you had were a large number of women in these families who, in fact, were relatives of women who had been dedicated sometimes or had absolutely nothing to do with temples at all. And I've argued that elsewhere. We can talk about that later if we have some time. By the late 1920s, caste associations made up of men from the Devadasi community, such as the Muthuraj Mahajana Sangam in nearby Trichy, began a public cleanup campaign in towns such as Virali Malay, owing in large part to the Anti-Devadasi Bill introduced into the Madras Legislative Assembly in 1927 by Muthulakshmi Reddy, and that's something we've already heard about from Avanti. Temples such as those at Virali Malay and Tirugokarnam fell under the purview of Pudukkote's Devasthanam Committee. In 1931, 2 years after Muthukanna was born, the Darbar passed an order that would downsize activities in the temples to accommodate only the quote-unquote essentials of worship. Obviously, dance was not considered an essential of worship. The tax-free land grants, or manyams, that Devadasis and other temple servants received at Virali Malay gradually began to disappear over the next few years and had ceased completely. By the 1940s, when Muthukanna's performance career really should have been at its peak, the temple staff was facing severe economic difficulties. Muthukanna remembers, quote, "There was no interest in the dance, but we felt we had to keep it up, even though we were getting almost nothing from the temple. Besides, what else could I do? Singing and dancing were the only things I was taught to do. I couldn't just leave. I used to think in those days, why should I leave? This is my temple." After 1947, we faced real problems. The temple manyam stopped completely, and our savings had been used up. First, we had to sell our house and moved into the very small house in the next alley. We sold all my jewels piece by piece. It was like this. One day I would pawn a necklace, thinking the money would last us for a few months, but it didn't. So then I pawned my talay saman, the head jewels, but that wasn't enough either. Like this, piece by piece, I pawned off all of my jewels. Who knows where they are now? Muthukanna's father, Ramachandra Natunar, who was also her dance master, had 5 sons and 4 daughters. He was trained by his mother, his aunt, and also their teacher, Kumaraswami Natunar of Tanjavur. According to Muthukarna, the ritual songs and dances of the temple were taught to Ramachandran Arjuna by the women in the family, and the courtly Tanjavur-style Sadir Kacheri, or concert repertoire that we'll discuss a little later, was taught to him by Kumaraswami Natranar of Tanjavur. The practice of dedicating one daughter to Murugan at Virali Malai had been in place in this family for several generations, as this ensured that the manyams provided by the Devasthanam remained within the family. Ramachandran Natranar's household was somewhat unique because the succession of inheritance continued through both male and female offspring, and Natvanars, or dance masters, gave their daughters to the temple as Devadasis. All right, and so here, just very quickly, if we look, apologize, I don't know why this is getting cut off, but here we see a basic sort of, over the last few generations, the pattern of the manyam inheritance, and as you can see, it passes from women to men, back to women. In most Natvanar families, in fact, this was not the case. Natvanar families normally did not dedicate their girls to temples. According to Muthukarna, the family did not, in fact, use the term dasi or tevadiyal to refer to dedicated women, but rather used the term adag, meaning pledged one, a reference to the fact that in every generation, one woman was to be pledged or married to Murugan. Of course, what this means essentially is that all of the other women in the family were these non-dedicated performers, who would live in the matrifocal sort of structure of the household and would participate in the non-conjugal sexual lifestyles that were associated with these women. Right, and here, just very quickly, we have a little bit of just an image of the manyam inheritance in Virali Malai that belonged to Ramachandra Antunar's family. Used to encompass this entire area, which now has been sold off, and as you can see, there are several other structures there. Here are very quickly some images of the Virali Malai temple, the entrance to it. It's probably a little better. You can see it's located atop a hill, basically Nayak period. We can talk about that later if we have some time. And finally, here is the Utsava Murti, or the processional image of Murugan as Shanmukhanatha Swami, flanked by Valli, who's cut off here, and Devasena. Ramachandra Natvanar's responsibilities in the temple included ensuring that dance remained part of the Nitya Puja rites and ensuring that the temple melams, or dance and music troupes, performed during Utsavas. Right, and here you can see it's very common in Virali Malai to have both the distinction largely that some scholars have made between quote-unquote Periya Melam, that is the big band consisting of the Nagaswaram and the Tavil, versus the Chinna Melam, the small band consisting of the female performers and dance masters. Here you actually see them all together. It was very common for them to actually interact, and the kind of binary distinction, unfortunately, that we tend to see in scholarship on temple performance really, I don't think, existed on the ground. And I think this photograph from Virali Malai really shows sort of ways in which those communities were connected. The Dasi Melam, or notch troupe, included a mridangam player, a clarinet player, a bagpipe player to maintain the shruti or the pitch, and Ramachandran Natvanar himself, who would sing and keep the rhythm on a small pair of cymbals called talam. On other occasions, Ramachandran Natvanar and his troupe would, along with other melams from Tirugokarnam, perform the public or courtly dance called sadir kacheri on makeshift pavilions or pandals in the outer precincts of the temple. Many of the compositions in the Sadir Kacheri repertoire were addressed to the last kings of Pudukkote and Tanjavur, namely Martanda Bhairava Tondeman and Shivaji Maharaja II, which we'll talk about in a minute. By the time Muthukarna was born, the anti-Devadasi movement had reached its high point in Tamil and Telugu-speaking parts of South India. In order to assure the continuation of manyam grants, Devadasi families throughout South India rushed to have their daughters dedicated, and Muthukarna's family did the same. In 1936, at the age of 7, she was married to Shanmukhanatha Swami, the localized form of Murugan who presides over Virali Malai Hill. When Muthukarna performed at the Virali Malai Temple from circa 1937 to 1955, there was an outright disinterest in her dance. For the most part, temple administrators, priests, and audiences thought of the dance as perfunctory, a residual performance of the past that had very little relevance or was of very little interest to anyone. The Sadir Kacheri, or courtly repertoire, performed by Muthukarna every week in the Chandanakottam Hall, borrowed its structure from the dance tradition of the 19th century Tanjavur court. In fact, many of the compositions are in praise of the Tanjavur Maratha kings of the 19th century, namely Sarfoji II and his son Shivaji II. And here we see Shivaji II. The following video excerpt is from a shabdam, also called salamu, a courtly genre that contains Telugu text extolling the king on the one hand and rhythmic syllables called cholakattu on the other. In keeping with the multilingual nature of literary production at the Maratha court in Tanjavur, the text ends with the Urdu word salam, salutations, accounting for its name, salamu. All right, and of course, what's very interesting here is, of course, the salam that's used is not the salam, but in fact the colonial British style salam. Just very quickly, a translation of the text before we move on to the video. The text is Bhosala Kulasoma, Bhutajana Vishrama, Nikusati Dorani Vani Ninne Naranaminanu Tanjapurini Velasina Sri Mantudu Nivera, Shivoji Maharajendra, Bharira Melu Saram Salamure. Scion of the Bhosala clan, protector of the people, there is no ruler equal to you. And this is what I've always believed. Residing in the city of Tanjavur, you are the most opulent, wealthy king. Shivaji Maharaja, salam to you. All right, so very quickly we'll go to the video. As early as 1727, that would happen sooner or later. As early as 1727, Devadasi dance had been introduced into colonial public ceremony when a Dasi Melam accompanied Major John Roach in a procession to accompany the inauguration of the company's new charter in Madras. In 19th century Tanjavur, King Sarafoji II encouraged the use of Western music in his royal rituals of display by instituting the Tanjore Palace Band, a prominent fixture at the Maratha Darbar. In 1848, the Devadasis of the Tanjavur court are known to have danced to Western music, including God Save the King, taught by them to one Mr. Edward, who was on the palace payroll. A unique composition in the courtly repertoire, or Sadir Kacheri of Muthukannu, is the Nottu Swaram. The word Nottu is actually the English word note, and this genre, originally created at the court of King Sarafoji II, is modeled after English marching band tunes adapted to the Shankarabharanam scale in Carnatic music. Right? And here, very quickly, at the Tanjavur Palace, in fact, we have a record of Sarafoji's own commissioning of these types of compositions that were specifically meant for Devadasi dance performances and band performances, and the two would be interchangeable. Right? So here, very quickly, among the earliest specimens of Western music in Western notation produced in an Indian setting. Probably the earliest specimen, in fact. Oops, sorry. Just go back there. According to Muthukannu, her Nottuswaram was performed at the Pudukote Darbar for Martanda Bhairava Tondeman. And here we have a couple of images of him. There's one of him inside the Brihadambal temple. There's another image. Muthukannu jokes that apparently it was a composition that Maharaja Martanda Bhairava was very fond of on account of his Australian wife, Molly Fink, whom he married in August of 1915. From November 1915 to April 1916, the Raja and his new wife lived in Pudukote and are said to have visited the Virali Malai temple on at least two occasions. According to Muthukannu, this is the time during which dances such as the Nottuswaram and folk genres such as Kummi and Kolatam bearing his name would have been performed. Muthukannu's Nottuswaram also has its origin in Western tunes. The Rakes of Mallow, some of you may have heard of this. The Rakes of Mallow is a well-known English drinking song that was first printed circa 1733 in London. And this is, in fact, Muthukanna's Nortuswaram. The term rake, a shortened form of rekel, refers to a wandering man who lives a life of debauchery, and Mallow is the administrative capital of County Cork in Ireland. The dance for the Nortuswaram itself consists of footwork characteristic of many European folk dances, and the imperial context of the dance can clearly be seen, again, in the salam gesture that concludes each phrase of movement. So now, just very quickly, we shall see the video excerpt. Dances such as the Salamu and the Nortuswaram, as rituals of display from the 19th century courts of Tanjavur and Pudukote, are homeless when they are performed at the Virali Malai Temple in the 1950s. They appear as empty rituals with no audience, meaning, or context. But Muthukanna wistfully laments her losses by invoking the past time and time again. Quote, "I've been singing these songs to myself since I stopped the temple dancing in my late 20s. Sometimes I think, why do I bother? It might seem like I've lost everything, and these songs may not be important for other people, but they are and always will be a part of me, so I keep singing." I would argue that even if insufficient to reverse or overthrow popular constructions of themselves as prostitutes, this persistence of memory among Devadasis may nevertheless be effective at the level of individual identity. Here, I'm not referring to the ways in which contemporary cultural theorists speak of collective memory, but rather invoking a theory of individual remembering that recognizes the value of the individual's ability to make sense of her life. This individual remembering, commented upon most recently by historian Anna Green, subverts the idea that memory must compose a past that is publicly acceptable. Instead, I suggest that at the individual level, memory augments the conscious self's ability to contest and critique cultural scripts, and thus affirm self-worth and personal identity. Thick description and emotional intensity characterize these movements through the remembered landscape. These embodied memories are an invaluable source for the historian. They provide us with insights into Devadasi culture that cannot be found in the archive, texts, or even modern dance repertoire. As I was leaving the Virali Malai temple with Muthukanna one night, a monkey happened to cross our path. This reminded her of the wild peacocks associated with Murugan, which used to gather in great numbers atop the hill at Virali Malai. Inhabitants of Virali Malai revere the peacocks and see them as auspicious omens signaling the god's presence in the town. Right away, Muthukanna laughed and said, "Look, when the Maharaja of Pudukote was gone, the peacocks left with him. Now even his house has been made into a government building. That's why you don't see any more peacocks at Virali Malai. That's why you don't see Sadir Kacheri anymore. That's why my land is gone and I'm like this. But this isn't how it used to be." In a recent essay, Margaret Maybaum suggests that the core questions of identity formation, who am I and what do I do, can be partially addressed through the additional queries of where have I come from and who have I been. For Muthukanna today, the answers to these questions can only be discovered and articulated from what we might call deep memory, a process that remakes the self and reconstitutes identity from scattered fragments of remembrance, knowledge, and experience. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We've got lots of questions.
Great.
I have a comment, just a comment, Devesh.
Sure.
Remember this note, English
right.
note. You know, the whole Carnatic music took it on, and you remember this Madhuramani.
Right, that's later.
Like
right. Sure.
The
sure.
same thing. And it used to be the rage. Every kacheri or every program had to end with that.
Right. But it's interesting that that was actually forgotten for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually
it's
began.
It's surviving now.
It survives now in the concert music tradition. But it actually was something that began in the Darbar of Sarfoji, in the Maratha Darbar, and then was picked up later on through the Tanjavur Quartet by Muthuswami Dikshita. And I think there are several people here. I think Sanjukta Gupta, in fact, has written a little bit on Dikshita, where she mentions the fact that he, in fact, used these European tunes. But, in fact, the process was started just before Dikshita at Sarfoji's court. And we've just recently found those courtly records, so it's all very exciting.
It's very sweet on the flute. Mahalingam has made it very famous.
Right.
I think this is a composite thing also with the
yes, absolutely.
Yes. with the German.
Absolutely.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's enough to serve.
Right.
I need a copy of the Lotus Swaram. I have to show it to all my family.
Well,
my mother's from Cork, and that tune.
Really? Well, you know, it took me forever, you know, in Montreal to try and decipher what the roots of this song were. And I checked with several musicologists, in fact, to get to. Right. Right, okay. Oh, very interesting.
Very, very famous
tune. Right.
To see an old Indian woman dancing. That's pretty freaky.
So just to sum up, it is this kind of secular gestures and secular, I said sexual, these secular forms that didn't come into the classicized era.
Of course, that's a whole other sort of discussion, and I think recently I've been presenting a lot on that, so some of you may be familiar with that work, but I really believe that, in fact, this Devadasi tradition in South India that has been constructed as a temple-based tradition, in fact, was not that. And I would take that all the way back to the Nayak period, because even back then, we see that there is no real emphasis on the temple tradition. As you said, the idea of the temple tradition comes into being, and comes into its reaches its maturity, I would say, really only in the 20th century, when the letters come from the Devadasis, and when there is public debate around temple dedication. In fact, I go to the extent of even arguing that Muthulakshmi Reddy was not, in fact, targeting temple performances, because as far as I can tell from my work, by the 1920s, when she was trying to put all of this legislative material, this legal stuff together, what ended up happening was, in fact, it was clear that in the city of Madras, for example, temple dancing was almost non-existent. So what was, in fact, the anti-Nautch movement reacting to? They were reacting to secular performances that these secular dancing women were giving in the homes of private patrons. It was called Mezuvani in Telugu, and something that was an integral part of Devadasi culture outside the temple context. Yeah.
Just quick, the dance that she performed, was she remembering an old dance, or was she... remembering song and setting it to
No, it's absolute. The choreography was taught to her by her father, and it was taught to him by Kumaraswamy Natwanar of Tanjavur, who lived at the end of the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And that I know for a fact, because I've met with six other Devadasis who also were involved with Kumaraswamy Natwanar and his Neram, and they have this very similar kind of performance aesthetic. They didn't have these exact compositions because this is quite localized.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the style and the technique is very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.